Shalom, this is Gamliel Shmalo. In Shoftim 15, we continue the story of the gigantic, superhuman Shimshon, arguably the most ambiguous figure in the Hebrew Bible. On the surface, he seems like a wild man, full of passion, often sexual passion, prone to anger and violence. He will ultimately meet his end blinded by the Plishtim, the Philistines, because, to paraphrase the rabbis, he followed his lustful eyes, so his eyes were gouged out. But we see another side of him as well. His anger is only directed towards the governing Philistine enemy. He is often cold and calculating in his attacks against them. And the previous chapter 14 already revealed that many of his strange actions were indeed intended to create a pretext for such attacks. The first pretext was marrying the Philistine bride from Timnatha. At the end of the previous chapter, Shimshon got angry at his new Philistine friends for pressuring his nameless Philistine bride to reveal the solution to his riddle about the lion and the honey. Shimshon was upset at her as well for betraying his trust. In any case, he turned his back on the Philistine town of Timnatha and walked back up Nahal Sorek to his parents' home in Sarah. The father of the bride, presuming that Shimshon would never return, and perhaps worried that his daughter would be considered damaged goods, brought his daughter to Shimshon's best man and married her off. Our chapter begins with Shimshon returning with a peace offering, only to discover his father-in-law blocking the door, saying that his bride had been given away to Shimshon's buddy. Shimshon's response is quick, cold, and calculated. Niketi hapam miplishtim. Now I'm in the clear. I can exact revenge, and no one can hold it against me. He had suffered a terrible offense, yet we are not told that he got angry. We don't see that the Spirit of God settled on him, which is a phrase used in these chapters to mean that he was emboldened by some divine strength. As far as we can tell, the Philistines have fallen into a well-laid trap that Shimshon had set for them. They had given him the pretext to exact violent revenge without them then having the ability to blame either Shimshon or the subjugated Jews. What does Shimshon do? Famously, he traps 300 foxes, ties their tails in pairs, attaches a burning torch to each pair of tails, and sets the foxes free to run wild among the Philistines' drying wheat fields and olive orchards, setting them ablaze. Who do the Philistines blame? Not Shimshon or the Jews, but the duplicitous father-in-law and his poor daughter, who they cruelly burn alive. Shimshon now has a further pretext to escalate the attacks against the Philistines until he finally withdraws to the territory of Yehuda. But why the big game of chess and the single-handed attacks? Why didn't God appear to Shimshon and direct him to gather an army and rise up against the Philistines as he previously directed Gideon against the Midianites only 9 chapters ago? It seems that now the Jews were simply undeserving of such intervention and independence. Chapter 13 began with a description of the Jews continuing to do evil in the eyes of God, and therefore being placed under the thumb of the Plishtim. In that, the story followed the common pattern of Shoftim: sin leads to subjugation. But in contrast with the other stories in Shoftim, we are not told that the Jews then called to God for help. There was no national religious revival. Perhaps because they despaired in the face of the Philistines' overwhelming strength and cruelty. Even as Shimshon acted as a judge for 20 years, as we will be told at the end of our chapter, the Philistines continued to rule. Shimshon's job, then, was to inspire the people that the Philistines could be challenged and defeated. The Spirit of God might again pulsate among Israel, and that Spirit could lead them to victory and independence, if only the Jews would have a change of heart. Shimshon was not chosen to bring a redemption. Shimshon was chosen to awaken in the Jews a hope in the possibility of redemption, which hope might then catalyze the necessary religious revival. We will need to see whether the strategy was successful, but it is interesting to note that modern Israel continues to be inspired by Shimshon's strength, his ability to work undercover and enlist unconventional tactics. Even today, the symbol of the Israeli army's Southern Command is a fox with a fiery tail. And I'm going to ask Rabbi Joe to post a link to a battle song written by Uri Avneri called Shimshon's Foxes, sung by Shoshana Damari in 1952. In order to provoke the Plishtim and not enrage them against the Jews, Shimshon needed to operate undercover, acting like a violent terror, estranged from his people and infatuated with Philistine women. But it is not easy to continually act one way and feel another. Behavioral psychology teaches that ultimately our actions change who we are on the inside. Even years of holy preparation, being raised as a Nazir with the long hair and the abstinence from wine, can only slow the change, but they cannot entirely prevent it. I think we might be able to locate the moment when Shimshon began to become intoxicated by his own power and lose sight of his mission. In our chapter, Shimshon breaks the ropes that had tied his hands, grabs the jawbone of a donkey, and kills 1,000 Plishtim. So far, so good. But then, he breaks into a short song. Belechi achamor, chamor chamortayim, belechi achamor, hiketi elef liish. With the jaw of an ass, mass upon mass, with the jaw of an ass, I have slain 1,000 men. This is no longer just a necessary covert operation. This is a celebration of slaughter, sung to himself, in praise of his own power, without a hint of thanks for any divine assistance. Reflecting on this story in the first century CE, Josephus concluded, quote, "Upon this slaughter, Samson was too proud of what he had performed, and said that this did not come to pass by the assistance of God, but that his success was to be ascribed to his own courage, and vaunted himself that it was out of a dread of him that some of his enemies fell, and the rest ran away upon his use of the jawbone." God, it seems, needed to awaken Shimshon from his intoxication with his own power. So Shimshon became extraordinarily thirsty. Suddenly humbled, he then pronounced the first of his two recorded prayers, begging the divine for water. God responded, and Shimshon caught himself from sliding further into the fictional role he had assumed for himself. Will he be able to maintain that separation between his role and his inner self? For that, we will have to read chapter 16.